Everybody, I guess we're live. Jimmy D and the Wolf podcast.
At the same place, at the same time.
Yeah.
Which is a miracle in COVID days.
Yes, it is. Yeah. So, I hope we're going live. This is a new setup for it. It says live right there. You logged into Jimmy D and the Wolf, right?
Yep.
Okay.
One of the 11 Facebook pages that I had. I sorted through them.
Yeah. Yeah. We have a number of Facebook pages. We've got Anyone Can Master Guitar.
Yeah.
I've got my personal page and Tim Wolf page. We have this one, Jimmy D and the Wolf. And there's a few others.
Artist pages. Facebook groups.
We have groups, yeah.
We don't lack in ambition. That's for sure. Nobody can say we're lacking in ambition.
About that. What's that little thing in the bottom there? Jimmy, is that just to be ignored?
To share it with friends.
Oh, okay.
I think it's to be ignored.
To be ignored.
And our newest venture that I'm excited about is our custom song.
Absolutely.
Thing, which I think is awesome.
Right.
So what it is, basically, is if you have an event, like if you have a wedding or birthday party or corporate event or something like that, you send us, you fill out this questionnaire and send it to us, and we will write you a custom song for your event.
Absolutely.
Which is, it's interesting because the first one we did for our friend Alex Mittler in Germany, he essentially wrote the song himself, and all we had to do was put it together. His questionnaire, like, had all the details that we needed.
Yeah.
And the song wrote itself, so.
We have to finalize it.
Yeah, yeah. Something for people to keep in mind. So if you want something like that to encapsulate a memory.
Right.
Custom song.
And you can choose. We both are, and we're still building the pages that you can opt in on. But you can choose either of us as the artist to sing the song. So if you want Tim Wolf to do it, I'll do it. Or if you want Jimmy D to do it. And we'll still write the song together and produce it in my studio in Nashville. But you can have either of our voices on it. And so that's something we're offering right now. And if you're interested in that, send us an email or send us a message on Facebook and we'll get back to you.
Absolutely.
And you have a video that you, have you shared your video?
Not yet. I need to share it. I've honestly been trying to catch up on a couple of things before
sure.
I do.
Yeah.
You know, because I'm optimistic and I think that once I start sharing it that we'll get quite a few custom song orders. And we've been so busy with all these other things that I've been trying to get in a place where I'm kind of caught up.
Sure.
To start sharing it and then give the songs the time that they deserve to try to do them right, you know.
Right. And so the events that And basically, there's someone who's mentoring me that I took one of his courses, a day-long course, and he's got an online course. And he's been doing this for 15 years, and he's got a procedure and questions to ask and how to set it all up and that sort of thing. And he does them for weddings, of course, and not just weddings, though, but many other events, engagements, divorces, if you will. Okay, maybe not.
Fist fights.
retirement
family
parties.
Interventions.
Yeah, family interventions.
Yeah, we'll do drug interventions, lynchings, bar mitzvahs. We'll write you a song for anything.
But seriously, retirement parties, and even could be for organizations. If you have a nonprofit or an organization or a corporation, a brand, we can adapt to any of those. So very excited about it. And so you are now, you've got two gigs this weekend. This is Friday as we're doing this. Three gigs.
Things are starting to pick back up, man, which is great for me because I was so used to playing all the time, man, you know, four or five nights a week and doing so many different things musically, that you just can't feed that thing if you're not playing in front of people, you know?
Yeah.
I was trying as hard as I could with the Facebook Live thing and doing as well as I could, but without that energy exchange of live crowds, it's just not the same. And I'm really, really happy that things are opening back up in Indiana and that we'll be able to get back to playing a lot. And, you know, I just pray that we don't have a new COVID explosion or whatever, you know, that, that it's not, doesn't go the wrong direction. It's incredible to me, man, how much it affected my, it just made me angsty. Like not getting to play shows.
Yeah.
It affected me in a psychological way that I didn't anticipate at all. I was just feeling angsty, like walking around the house, like I'm supposed to be doing something. What am I supposed to be doing?
Well, you have done, I ask you to add up what you thought, you've probably done well over 5,000 gigs.
Yeah, it's insane, man.
And you've been doing this full time for over 20 years.
Yeah.
And so, and you've averaged for 20 years, you've averaged, you said, at least 5 gigs a week.
Yeah.
Which is absolutely amazing.
It's insane. You know, man. Well, you know, my musical mentor, Carol DeCamp, in my early 20s, his advice was different than everybody else's advice. When I started taking a lot of gigs, there were some musicians I knew that were saying, man, you know, you shouldn't take solo gigs for that much money. You're hurting the market. But my mentor's advice was, time with a guitar in your hand is time well spent. So take every gig that you can get. And that's exactly what I did, man. I would just take anything, regardless of what the pay was. Because I was looking at it, instead of looking at it from the perspective of how much money can I make tonight, I was looking at the big picture of, you know, how much guitar can I play, because it's going to help me.
Yeah.
And that was my goal, was, you know, the end result was to just become as proficient with it as I possibly could. And I haven't said no to a gig, man, for a long time, you know, regardless of what I was playing, if it was country or whatever, maybe not my favorite bag to play in, I'd take it anyway. But it all comes around, man. But it's funny how much we are truly creatures of habit, because once that stopped, there was part of me that was really relieved to have some downtime around family and focus on some of the things that we've sure, got going yeah. on, yeah. you know, focus on our guitar website and other ventures that we have. But it just affected me in a deep psychological way. I was just angsty, man. Really, really angsty.
Yeah, that's understandable. And so how far do you go for your gigs? Just for, you go, usually, I know the answer,
usually,
I think.
Usually, man, a couple hours away. You know, I mean, I'm always willing to go to Nashville for stuff. But outside of that, the base that I play in is like Indy to Cincinnati to Lexington to Louisville, sometimes Evansville. And it's a great part of the country for music, man. It really is. I'm always really impressed by musicians continually, and have been since I started doing it, musicians in this area. And I don't know what causes it, man. I mean, I don't know if it's something in the water. I mean, my theory is that geographically, this part of the country, you know, it's this interesting thing that happens where musicians, and especially guitar players, are really versatile. Because to stay busy coming up around here, you know, if you're coming up in Louisville or Cincinnati or Indy or any of the small towns in between, coming up and playing in bars, you got to play some classic rock, and you got to play a little country, and you got to play a little blues, and you got to be able to mix it up. And my take on it is that the musicians in this part of the country aren't really like discrete musicians, if you would, you know, for lack of a better term. They're not you and I focused for the most part. Most of the guys that I know around here, they can pretty much do whatever, you know, different styles.
You've been forced to do that because of your
you have
market.
To. Yeah, you have to. It's because what the market is, man, and geographically speaking, I mean, we're not that far from Tennessee, so there's obviously the big country influence, and Cincinnati was so steeped in funk with King Records and there was always great musicians out of Cincinnati. Louisville's always been super eclectic and always had great musicians. There's a ton of incredible players from Louisville. And you have the bluegrass influence from Kentucky. Indianapolis has the storied jazz history, and there's always incredible jazz musicians and R&B musicians from Indianapolis. And the state of Indiana in general has produced just a really eclectic mixture of incredibly unique artists, you know, all across the board.
So for those of you who are watching us, and let's adjust this just a little bit so that we can see a little bit more than our...
Too bad I can't deliver you guys some Jimmy John's. Sounds good. Funny you should mention that, Jeff, because we were talking about lunch right before we started, and we're like, whoa, do we have time to eat? Now we better do a podcast. Jimmy John's sounds awesome.
Anyway, so we're in Madison, Indiana, which is on the southern border of Indiana, on the Ohio River, and right across from Kentucky, and not in the southern tip of Indiana. The southern tip of Indiana. Well, what's in the southern tip of Indiana? As you go down, but we're right on the river.
The little boot, it's down by Cincinnati. It's more like rising sun territory, that kind of stuff.
And so this is, I mean, from Madison is a really historic town. There's a lot of old historic buildings here that date back 100, 150 years. Brick, beautiful brick buildings.
It's a gorgeous little town.
What's the, you were saying that's the biggest?
Largest contiguous historical landmark in the country.
In the country, in the United States.
The entire downtown is a historical landmark, and it's absolutely beautiful, and the people here are beautiful too. Some great people.
Absolutely.
Really friendly. You know, I've had a lot of friends move here from the big cities and say, you know, that they felt like they stepped in a time machine. Like, you drive by and people just wave at you. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like the Mayberry thing, and that's, as you know, man, in our conversations, I always refer to Madison as Mayberry.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, it really is in my mind and in my heart, this is Mayberry, because people you don't know are just like, hey, how's it going? You don't get that in the city as much anymore, you know?
And for those of you who maybe not from the U.S., old, maybe 60s TV show called Mayberry, RFD, Andy Griffith sitcom, so that's what that's
great
referring
stuff,
to,
man.
You know? So, and in Madison, within, let's see, so you said Cincinnati's an hour, I believe.
A little over an hour.
An hour drive. Indianapolis is an hour
and a half.
Hour and a half. Louisville, Kentucky
is an hour.
Nashville.
Nashville's three and a half.
Three and a half, which is where I live.
So it's a great, you know, it's a great location to do what I'm doing. You know, if you're an independent artist and you're not encumbered by a label and you don't have to be in one of the big music cities, it's great, man. I mean, I work in Louisville, work in Cincinnati, work in Indianapolis. And more interestingly than that, you just take in all these different vibes, man. There's all these styles. And even in this little town, like, there's great bluegrass players, there's great jazz players, there's great blues musicians, there's great writers. I mean, it's a town of 13,000 people, man. I mean, where else do you find that? And that's why, you know, it's I'm really passionate about what we're doing with M3, which is the Madison Music Movement. If we're just trying to shine a spotlight on the level of talent that we have and create an environment to bring even more of that here, because as you well know, I mean, COVID and the climate of the last year, many people are leaving the cities. They're leaving the cities in droves. Nashville, to a certain extent, has kind of swallowed itself in the music business. There are many people that are outsourcing from Nashville to be independent artists, going to Eastern Tennessee or Eastern Kentucky or on the outskirts of Nashville. And I predict that Madison will be a great hub for independent artists in the very near future. I mean, it already has been for me. I mean, I've made a living here, which is unheard of. Make a living as an independent artist in a market, 13,000 people in a town, and they've taken care of me, you know?
That's something that, because the nearest town to where I grew up here on South Dakota is about 13,000 people. And I would scratch my head coming to Madison because there's so much more going on here. Restaurants, bars,
yeah.
interesting things happening that Huron, South Dakota does not have in the slightest imagination. But, and so I've mentioned that a few times, I can't believe everything that's here with 13,000 people. But then you said in Jefferson County, there's 50, is it Jefferson County? 50,
yeah.
50,000 people.
Yeah.
So somehow it punches above its weight, so to speak.
It really does.
This is the killer Doberman.
This is the most aggressively affectionate dog in the world.
Emma. Everybody say hi to Emma.
Down. Emma should be famous.
Yeah.
Just for how sweet she is, isn't that right?
Yeah.
You know, funny story. When I got this dog, I wanted a big guard dog. A big, fierce protector, because I have three kids. And the person I got this dog from said, I have a puppy I need to get rid of. And I said, what kind of dog is it? And they said, a Rottweiler. And I was like, perfect. I need a Rottweiler. I need a... Look at this dog. This is my...
The least ferocious.
Look, unless... Emma. Look, show them. Look how fierce. She's a... Yeah. She's a Rottweiler. I'm certain of it. She's something.
She just wants to get on your lap and cuddle. Mm-hmm. And that's what she's all about.
Yeah. But yeah, it's 50,000 in the county. And, you know, we get a lot of people that come from... the cities to hear, to visit, and lots of festivals, lots of music, lots of culture, lots of art, and there's a lot of people here that really, really support the art. There's a great community that invests in, you know, visual arts and in musicians, and just the history of trying to preserve it. And it's interesting because sometimes it's frustrating because we are literally 20 years behind everything else in the country. Madison really is like getting in a time machine and going back 20 years. But with COVID, it's been such a blessing, man, because we were still in that 20-year time capsule. I'm not going to say we were unaffected, but we weren't affected anything like everybody else was. I mean, it's pretty much been business as usual for the most part.
Well, okay, a couple of things. I mean, you've never really... Okay, you're getting ready to go to stage five. Now that's Indiana ruling.
Yeah, Indiana.
And stage five means
what? Full capacity.
Restaurants. No restrictions.
No restrictions. You just got to wear a mask. Outside of that, we're going to be at full capacity.
And when does that stage five occur? Go
tomorrow.
Is that October 1st? Or
September something.
Okay, okay.
27th so, maybe?
Yeah, okay. Okay.
I'm bad with
so,
dates.
Well, Indiana is a red state.
Big right? time.
You have a Republican governor.
Yep.
And Vice awesome. President Pence is from Indiana.
Yep, went to school in Hanover, about 10 minutes from here.
So
it's a super red state.
So that red states tend to be more less enforcing of COVID guidelines. I think is a,
yeah,
I think that's an accurate statement. So that's going to really open things up for you. And do you normally have a lot of gigs in the fall?
It's unfortunate because a lot of the festivals that we would normally do have already been canceled, you know. So we miss a lot of that stuff. But it's starting to pick back up, man. I mean, people are hungry for music. People are just hungry to get back into the swing of things and feel something that feels like normal, whatever that is, you know. And I think the psychological effect on people has been huge. From not getting to socialize with others like they were before. I mean, I know for me personally, man, like my biggest release since I was like 13 years old has always been going to concerts. And I never imagined I would miss it as much as I have, and like how much just medicine for the soul that really was.
Sure.
Until I couldn't go to a concert. And after here I am, you know, 7-8 months after not seeing a live show, and I'm like, man, I would go see a band I didn't like right now, dude. I would go, literally, I'd go see anything right now. If there was a show that I could go to, it wouldn't matter.
Well, so, and one thing about Madison that you've told me, there are a lot of opportunities for live music, a lot of Madison. What's the statistic? Madison has the most drinking establishments per capita of any city in Indiana?
Yeah. We're a drinking town with a music problem. That's what's going on. There's no shortage of drinking happening.
And one thing that I've noticed coming here is it's a common thing. Everybody's got their little golf cart.
Right. Everybody's zipping around on their golf carts.
And apparently, even though technically you can have a DUI for drinking or driving a golf cart while intoxicated or a little too much to drink, apparently that is a way of getting around, and it's not either enforced or it's...
Well, I think it probably is to a certain extent, but I don't think people are worried as much about a head-on collision.
Sure, of course. You're not going to kill somebody.
Golf carts.
You run over somebody with a golf cart, and you're not going to kill them.
They're going to get banged up a little bit and brush it off and move on.
And you're not going to damage any property.
Right. I think it's smart.
You run into somebody's house with a golf cart.
Keep your golf carts off the interstate, guys. Because it's just a matter of time before somebody tries that. It's going to happen. We'll see it on the news.
Yeah. So that's one thing as far as the nightlife here. And you're saying there's a wedding. There's a lot of wedding activities here.
A lot of
here.
Weddings, yeah.
Because it's such a beautiful town
a
right
weddings,
on the river.
A lot of it is, man.
And then even you had said that it's becoming a bit of a bridesmaid bachelor party thing.
They're booking more and more of those.
Because Nashville is known as the bachelor party capital of the country.
It is.
And before COVID, you could go down to Broadway in Nashville, and you any day of the week, pretty much, you could find at least half a dozen bridal parties, whooping it up and having a good time. And I wonder. I mean, obviously, that has stopped. I mean, that has put the brakes on that, and all of those industry folks that depended on that. I mean, it's just a tragedy. And also, I know that they live venues. The smaller live venues, like for probably 50 to 250 or even 250 capacity, are suffering. And I know that the Tennessee government has passed a fund now to try to keep those venues alive, because once they shut down, they ain't coming back.
Yeah, well, and there's going to be a huge ripple effect with live music, less so in small towns like Madison, more so in places like Panama Beach, Nashville, Memphis, NOLA, Raleigh, Austin, places where the general consensus that I've heard from a lot of musicians, you know, these places where people were doing the live music thing on a consistent basis and had mortgages, had car payments, and all of a sudden that stopped dead in its tracks. And I've talked to numerous musicians that have said they're getting out of it forever just because of like the psychological effect of they had everything going and just hit the wall, and there was no unemployment for those people. There was no programs for those people. Many people lost everything, and many people in those cities will be done playing live music. And that's on the tail end of this. What people are going to see is when you go to Austin, Texas, when you go to Memphis, when you go to Nashville, when you go to Panama Beach, when you go to these cities that are notorious for having all this live music, the quality is not going to be the same, because the people in between that weren't in small towns and weren't on labels or touring big time making lots of money, the people that are making a living doing it, a lot of them have gotten out of it out of necessity.
Let's say Broadway. For a while, Broadway in Nashville, which is bar after bar packed next to each other, and the band is usually in the window facing away from the street and playing live, and you can hear you stand in the middle of the street and you can hear all of these bands playing different classic rock songs.
Sometimes you'll hear the same one.
Sometimes, but they're never in the same spot.
Right.
The song. Anyway, all those people, and people can make six figures, because you looked into that.
You can make a great living. And a lot of people were, man. There were guys in, even more down south, I mean, there were guys in Panama Beach making $1,000 a night.
Tips.
Yeah. All in, walking out with a grand that had gigantic mortgages that that'll stop in March.
And there's no unemployment. There's no safety net for those folks. And so I haven't been down to Broadway since COVID. I've been stayed at my house and my working in my studio. But based on everything else that's happened in Nashville, it can't be at full capacity. There's no way.
No, it's easing back into it from what I've seen.
And so those Broadway musicians that were depending on that revenue and that tip revenue
stopped dead in their tracks.
Yeah, it's going to be a big change, and the ripple effect, like you said, is going to be. We're not going to see it for a while.
Sure. And think about people. You know, if they'd gotten into it as an individual business and they're in their first 5 years.
No equity built up.
No equity built up. Claiming loss the first 5 years. You go to file for unemployment. What do they get?
Right.
They got nothing, man. Nothing. Even if they were killing it. So if you're an artist that started out 4.5 years ago and you were killing it and making all this money, but you still haven't shown a profit on your taxes and you went to file for unemployment, the government gave you nothing. So there are people that went from $150,000 a year paying their bills to nothing. They're out of the game forever, man. And I predict strongly that it's going to have a huge effect on the quality of live music entertainment that people are getting in the cities. I don't think that the level of musicianship is going to be near what it was before COVID. I hope I'm wrong, but I'd be surprised.
Well, what are some of these people moving towards?
Regular gigs. I mean, they have to go find factory jobs or construction jobs.
And you have friends who have told you they're moving to something else. Yeah. What are some of the examples of...
A lot of construction jobs, a lot of factory gigs. I know people that have went to work at hospitals, at banks, you know, because they've determined... You know, the nature of the music business, it's like anybody that's in real estate would understand this, or people that are in sales. December, you know, you're trying to figure out how to keep the lights on. And in July, you make more money and you know what to do with. So it comes and goes. And many of these indie musicians are settling into a 9-to-5 and figuring out, well, hey, I like having a consistent paycheck every week a lot more than...
Well,
and they're finding out how hard their job really, really was. People have that mindset of if you're a musician, you know, you're not trying hard enough, you won't get a real job. You're not kind of integrating yourself into the system, or you're too lazy to get a real job. And being an independent musician is one of the hardest jobs in the world, and one of the bravest things you can do. You have to promote yourself. You have to book the gigs. You have to maintain your equipment, you have to maintain your level of musicianship, you're keeping late hours, it's unpredictable pay. So a lot of the independent musicians that had to get out of it to do something else, they're finding all this comfort in their regular 9-to-5 all of a sudden.
Ari Herstand has written a book, and he's on the second edition already. Any independent musicians, if you haven't read his book, How to Make It in the New Music Economy, I think is what it's called. But Ari Herstand, you just search for his book. And he has got some great advice he's got blogs and podcasts, great advising independent musicians, great resource. And he talks about when you're trying to come up as an artist, an independent artist, and you obviously don't have enough money to support yourself, so you get a job. He talks about what kind of job you should get. And he says you should get a job that uses your body and not your mind, because when you get home you want your mind fresh, like a construction job. I mean, you're still thinking, but you're not as opposed to a sales or where you're
having the people more
and it exhausting mentally. When you get home, you want to have time and energy, mental energy, to write songs, work on your music. And he also says be very careful if you're in a job and you get offered a promotion. He emphatically, in all bold type caps in his book, says do not take that promotion.
He's absolutely right.
Because you take that promotion, I'm comfortable. I like this.
Right.
And you start, your focus switches from your artist career to, oh man, I actually have I have a regular schedule. Yeah. I have my weekends off. I know what my pay is going to be. And you get comfortable.
Which is the worst thing that can happen to an artist, man.
Yeah.
Comfort is like the kiss of death to any artist.
Well, in another level, a different, I mean, and he says that he's talking about those who want to be sing their own music versus a cover gig. And he says, which is interesting, having a cover gig is a day job.
Sure.
Which is Broadway. And you've talked about that. Broadway, you're doing covers. You're not doing originals.
It absolutely is, man. And there's so many great writers that start doing that, you know. Show up on Broadway and they start doing the gig and they start making some money. And they blink and they realize it's 25 years later and they're, you know, they haven't finished their original album or whatever and they're still doing covers on Broadway.
So it's definitely a momentum thing.
Well, it's huge. And I think you see that even after it happens for people, even after they have success, it's commonplace, man. You hear it all the time when people talk about artists. Like their first album, man, it was incredible. Of course it was. They were hungry. They didn't have anything, and then they get the money and the second album, the sophomore slump.
Yeah.
Why they have a sophomore slump? Well, they're not hungry anymore, man. They're comfortable. And after you knock it out of the park and get a couple million bucks in the bank, it's hard to be, you know, have that same
true
kind of fire.
There's also, though, the thing that you've had your whole career to write that first album.
Sure.
You most likely have honed it. Like, let's say someone we both revere at the highest level, Stevie Ray Vaughan.
Yeah.
He spent 10 years playing how many gigs in a week? Probably 5 gigs a week, 7 mm-hmm. gigs a week in the Dallas music scene, which is a very cool scene back at that time, and honing his chops so well that the band was able to go in and on a Thanksgiving weekend and use Jackson Browne's studio, which he happily gifted to them in California, and cut that first album live. And because they could do it live because they had done it for so long in music venues. And then that comes out and it's a hit, surprise hit. Blues can actually be a hit. Wow, who could believe that? And now you got to come up with a sophomore album. And you got, what, 1 or 2 years? The label wants you to come out with it immediately?
You had your whole life to do the first one.
You had your whole life. Now, Stevie and Double Trouble, I think their second album is better than the first. You know, and they had more time to do it, to record it. They didn't have to go in and do it on the cheap. You know, so he was such a phenomenal artist that he was able to do that.
Yeah.
But a lot of artists, I think that contributes to the sophomore slump.
It does, and it's a painful thing even making albums because they're never done.
Sure, yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You can take them apart for your entire life.
Absolutely.
And you're always in a different place when it's done. And if you do it by yourself, you know, if you do it independently and there's no producer involved, by the time that it's hitting other people's ears, you're so sick of hearing it, man, because you've had to analyze it 10 billion different ways.
Yeah.
And, you know it by heart. My thing has always been that I just put it down. Once I'm done with it, I don't even listen to it again for like 6 months, if possible, or until I'm playing those songs. And sometimes you come back and you're like, what was I thinking? This is garbage. And sometimes you're pleasantly surprised and it comes back around better than you thought. But the artist never hears it the same way that other people do. David Gilmour had a fascinating comment I read in an interview. Dark Side of the Moon was considered their biggest masterpiece, and it was, at least at the time I read the interview, it was the greatest selling album of all times. And he said that his only regret was that he never got to hear that album for the first time.
Ah,
and I thought
wow,
that was
wow.
Fascinating.
Fascinating,
man.
Yeah.
He heard it in building blocks, you
yeah,
know, and
yeah.
steps. He
wow.
heard
wisdom.
Every step of it.
Wisdom.
He never
wow.
got to receive it, you know? And so the way that the artist hears it and the way that everybody else hears it is always completely different worlds. I always heard that SRV thought real highly of the In the Beginning album because it caught that raw aspect.
I didn't know that, but it's one of my favorites.
Yeah, me too, man.
The rawness.
Yeah, it caught that aspect of what he was really about, that kind of in-your-face
guitar playing. He was in
yeah,
your face.
Right. Right. It's just, he's just going hard the whole time. And he didn't really like the refined part of being in the studio. Which is interesting, man. There's some artists that they never even catch. It's like Buddy Guy. There's Buddy Guy albums that I just love, especially Sweet Tea. But when you see Buddy Guy live, it's a powder keg, man. He's just an incredible musician. And still, at like 85 years old, they've never really grabbed that. They've never really caught that from Buddy Guy. I mean, I'm not knocking his albums. His albums are great. But his live game, man, like, he just hasn't gotten with the right person to harness what he really does live. In my personal opinion, I've heard it all, man. You know, I've been listening to him forever. But that's the thing of guys like that. What works with the masses is it's never what they like the most. You know, what they want to hit and what actually hits are always two different worlds.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's talk about moving forward on, we were talking about live, going live on different platforms, and I'm an incredible consumer of music business periodicals because it's the intersection of my love of music and my love of business. And so I try to keep up on all the Billboard magazine and a lot of different articles talking about the business of music. And some of the articles have even made fun of how many new live streaming platforms there are.
Yeah, they're coming out like every 15 minutes.
Yeah, there's a new live streaming platform. Now, Amazon has just one example. Amazon's a big player. They're one of the top five social media companies in the world. With Amazon Prime, and Amazon Prime is the streaming and the music. And they have aspirations to be bigger. And they have Twitch. They own Twitch, which is the gaming, primarily the gaming channel.
It's blown up with music.
Now they have linked the musician's artist page. You can link it with a Twitch account so that you can literally go in and go live stream your music on Twitch, which is very smart. Those guys aren't, they're well managed, Jeff Bezos. So there are many other platforms that are starting this. And now Facebook has a big change that is announced for October 1st, a change rules
that you have to get an entertainment lawyer to read it to even make any sense of it, because they say if you use Facebook to create a music listening experience,
exactly, what does that even
then
mean?
Then we can delete your account and block your video. And then in the same breath, they said, but don't worry, guys. This isn't going to affect anything. So they've worded it to where legally
they can do anything.
They can do whatever they want to do.
So a lot of people, there are people that, famous in musician circles, Don Breyer from Nashville.
Yeah.
Often quoted, apparently 1 year, Rick Barker started this. He presented it at DIY Musicians Conference. In 2018, he said that she had made $100,000 the previous year live streaming on Facebook from tips. Now, that was 2017. She's still going, and I hope she's doing well, but most of her stuff is covers. She goes like live, or I've watched a few of her things. She goes live, or did. I don't know what she's doing now post-COVID or with COVID, but she was going live every morning and saying, I'll do a cover, give me a request, and get the tip jar out. That's where the money was coming from, was a tip jar. Well, with this new perceived change of Facebook, doing covers is going to be like running into a brick wall. Stop. Well, they're saying you can't do it. They're going to even not just give you a strike like YouTube.
Delete your account. And if you're an artist, that account is a big thing, because you can reach your audience directly, and you don't want to lose that account.
Don't want to lose that account. So it's a huge upheaval. In fact, you even mentioned earlier this week, we were talking to you on the phone, and you said you were going to go live, and you were a little nervous about that. And then in our discussion, we remembered that it wasn't October 1st yet, so I think you still went live.
I didn't end up doing it, but I want a better understanding, because the way that it's worded is, it's so, It's so open-ended that my take on it is that if it turns into a thing where, okay, you can't do covers anymore, I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, for those of us who write our own stuff.
It opens it up for songwriters.
Those of us who write our own stuff.
That would be great. But who's to say they can't, they won't still, it's up, it's to their discretion. You know, you play a song that you wrote that the changes are C, G, and E minor, and your accountant gets deleted for the song that you wrote. Where's the line? I mean, it's to the point to where I don't think they figured it out yet. I think they're getting some heat from the rights affiliate organizations. They're getting some heat from BMI, ASCAP, CSAC. Facebook doesn't have a way to police it. They don't have the manpower. And in their defense, nobody saw this thing blowing up. Nobody saw COVID coming. Nobody saw a live music game stopping and musicians having to go to Facebook Live. I don't think Facebook knows how to police it. And I foresee it as ultimately getting in a place where you, if you're going to stream on Facebook, it has to be live original music. The gut feeling I get from what they're doing is they don't know how to process all this information. So they're just pumping the brakes and they release this super vague statement. If you use Facebook to create a music listening experience, and I have people that say, well, that doesn't affect you.
Read what it says.
They can delete, it's very scary. Block you, anything. Very scary. What they're doing is they don't know what to do.
Now you,
and they're pumping the brakes.
YouTube is the biggest video sync music channel. People still go to YouTube. Sync meaning where you have music and it is synchronized to a moving picture, a video. So when music is put to a movie or a TV show is behind, whether it is called synchronized, and they shorten to sync. So the rules are different for sync placements of music versus, like, if I want to cover a song and just do an audio version, put it on Spotify, there's something called a compulsory license where the writer has to give me the right, and there's established licensing amount that is given to the songwriter. That is established.
Yeah.
So you can cover, legally, cover any song that's been released, and the writer can't stop you for covering it, and they will get their pay. Synchronization, which is where video or a moving picture is attached to it, is the Wild West. There are no laws, so you can be, like, for example, I covered a Eagles song, and I wanted to put a video up on it. And Don Henley and Glenn Frey, who wrote Desperado, did not allow me. In fact, I even engaged a licensing company to go out and try to get the license. And we were communicating back and forth, and they said, no way, no way. I also covered a Rolling Stones song, Miss You. And I was a little nervous because I'd been rejected for Desperado. And I reached out to this guy and said, oh, that's no big deal, because that's, the publishing is Universal, and they have a blanket agreement with YouTube. They'll just automatically, there's no strike, there's nothing, no, nothing against you, no trademark strike. They just get the money and they give you the license. So it's almost like a compulsory license. But it depends on the individual songwriter, the individual publisher. But YouTube has really stepped up their game, and they have an algorithm. For example, when you upload a new song and you have the option of saying you want it to be policed on YouTube in case someone would want to use your song, then yeah, you can get paid for that. And so I've done that. I've uploaded it to Spotify, and I selected that box, and then my song is registered as that if anyone uses it. And then I upload that to YouTube. I get a message from YouTube saying you have used someone else's song. It's a song that I wrote.
Yeah, right.
But it's a different system, and they say, they don't recognize that immediately that it was one of my songs. I don't get a strike, but they're saying you're not going to get the revenue from monetizing this because it's going this other channel, which is coming back to me. But
yeah,
YouTube doesn't recognize
YouTube, it. Right. But YouTube is much more long-term user-friendly for the artists.
Yes, sir.
Especially if you're an indie
artist. And they have the algorithm that they will discover that music, and it will, and it, they're very explicit. It says you, this is not a strike, because you get three strikes and then some things happen. You get penalized on YouTube. But this is not a strike against you. This is just recognizing that you are using a song that is owned by someone else, even if it was owned by me, but it goes through another channel, goes down. So YouTube is much, much more advanced than
and
Facebook
it's a search
is.
Engine. So and anybody search can find it.
Yeah. So YouTube, I'm still quite happy about staying on YouTube and promoting on YouTube. But Facebook is still a channel that we can't ignore because you can target an audience. Much you can't do that in any other platform. You can advertise and target an audience on Facebook based on demographics or likes or things, even a video that they previously watched, you can retarget them. So Facebook still is a very valuable tool for musicians, even though it's said that anyone over under 35, the only reason they go on Facebook to check to see if their grandma is still alive or what family posts are being said. So it's really an older platform.
It's become a middle-aged thing.
Yeah, middle-aged thing.
Well, the moral of the story, YouTube is your friend.
YouTube is your friend, as an artist, I feel. And Facebook, yet to be determined, could be your mortal enemy.
Exactly. Yeah, Facebook could end up being the devil for all these Facebook Live musicians. Yeah. Well, you ready to get some lunch?
Absolutely.
Thanks for watching.
Yeah. Jimmy D and the Wolf, this is the bell that you hear on every one of our podcasts. Mm-hmm. So,
peace.
See you next time.